people have never existed and are divided, incapable and unorganized. That's what they always said about we who are black and Indian and Asian, unable to manage our affairs. For such a small people to have confronted foreign aggression with massive weapons of advanced technology and to do it victoriously proves that, on the contrary, our people, our black and brown people of Africa, are not divided, but united, organized, and capable. In the struggle, we have achieved many victories. One of the most important has been the constitutional changes proclaiming the Arab Democratic Socialist Saharan Republic, which is recognized by all the non-aligned countries, the struggle of the Saharan people, the same as the struggle of all other of the peoples of the world who are oppressed by U.S. imperialism and her lackeys, should receive the solidarity of the international community. The people of the Sahara have at all times counted on the solidarity of the people of the Caribbean. The Saharan people have at all times received active support of the Guyana government. Even when we were hard pressed financially, we managed to send funds from Guyana yearly to help the Polisario Front fight the fascist oppressors. At international forums also, we would always speak up on their behalf. International forums, of course, are not enough. Aid is needed. And even appeal is made by the Guyanese for those who are willing to go and fight in the Sahara to see that the Saharans get their freedom from the dictatorships of Morocco. We expect a show of solidarity from all our friends. War generates solidarity. In this respect, the people of the Sahara will intensify the struggle and in this way fulfill our commitment to the international progressive community. Everyone has discarded the USA idea that we can find a peaceful solution to the oppressor's hold on Africa and all oppressed nations. Thus ends the news and commentary. Thank you very much, and I love you dearly. Please spend time dressing up the houses, doing extra things, planting things, taking special regard, because I gave you some things today that should make us feel a lot of guilt that we have this place. And there's so many more. I think it was 163 prisoners that wanted to get out, white and black. One of them I know was back, Bishop Moore sent to us, who'd been here, had been packed in with 17 other prisoners. By the way, the radio station should try to get his statement into the newspaper. Maybe if we have to put in an advertisement, we should get his statement in the newspaper. We should get all those statements into the newspaper. But let's try first to get them in. We've got wonderful news coverage of Dr. Lang, Mark Lane. We've got wonderful coverage. It's been on all the stations all night, all day. And it's caused Dr. Jagan to ask for an interview and a show of support. So we hope that some unity can come out of it. And we, of course, are granting that. But we have not, unfortunately, been organized well enough. The first thing we should do when people are coming of renown is to set up interviews. If the people did not seem to be suitable for interviews, we could always cancel. But here was Dr. Freed, one of the best linguists in the world, one of the most popular authors in USA, and there's not a word in the newspaper about him. So we must push hard to get that. I'm speaking to radio, Mike Brooks, and others like this to think of schemes. And then the bishop, the Methodist Church, and Dr. Goodlett, and his fine statements and his powerful offices that he holds, the most powerful black man in America. Even if we have to put out an ad, I think that should be done. I think it's worthy of it being done. Thank you very much. In the usual style of capitalist press, its incredible fascism has it to shatter the testimony of Earl Ray. Open hearings on the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King before the House of Assassinations Committee were adjourned August 18 with long-standing questions about possible FBI questions, about possible FBI involvements and conspiracy unexamined. So said that New York Times. They admitted that there were many questions unresolved. But I want you to know how they attempt to tear down a man's testimony, and if the court system of the United States offers you no hope whatsoever. And I keep remembering some sister here who's always saying, well, I'll be cleared in court, I'll be cleared in court. Courts never clear black people or poor people. But the five-day hearing did shatter the credibility of James Earl Ray's claims at the New York Times that he was the victim of a frame-up. Ray's alibi was a sharply disputed, and his much-awaited chance to give his full story was instead a prolonged anticlimax. Ray, who confessed to the murder and later repudiated his confession, maintained during his 3 days as a witness that he did not kill the black civil rights leader 10 years ago in Memphis. Ray is serving a 99-year sentence for the murder. He insisted throughout that a mysterious smuggler of guns and narcotics, identified only as Raoul, tricked him into purchasing the alleged murder weapon as a sample to be used in illicit rifle sales. He said he gave the rifle to Raoul, an anti-Castro Cuban, in Memphis the day before King was shot. Under extensive committee questioning, Ray's explanations for damaging allegations, many of them apparently documented, were surprisingly weak, consisting often of implausible coincidence or simple unsubstantiated denials. The absence of any fingerprints besides Ray's own rifle, the rifle found outside the rooming print. However, it was clearly shown by testimony that there had been tape put on the rifle to cover fingerprints, and Ray said that a man in a store offered him a rifle to look at to see if he would be interested. Very clever. Only by the assertion that Raoul wore bandages on the fingers was his defense. I would say that's a hell of a pretty good defense. Committee chairperson, Representative Lewis Stokes, black sellout, who's under a great deal of fire, Democrat Ohio, trying to save himself from a number of governmental investigations and newspaper smears, is trying to play the Uncle Tom role well. Ray was stalking King for some time before the murder, especially from the March 29 purchase of the high-powered rifle in Birmingham, Alabama, until the killing April 4. Stokes charged that Ray did not go from Birmingham to Selma, as he testified, but to Atlanta, then to Selma and Memphis, paralleling King's movements. However, there were two rays that were identified at different places at different times, almost identical in appearance. My, my, what fascism can do these days when it wants to frame someone. Ray contended his travel had nothing to do with King, and he was not in Atlanta on April 1. It had to be someone else. And, of course, the person that testified said it was someone that resembled Ray. He went so far as to say that it was proved he was in Atlanta. He would take responsibility. If it was proved he was in Atlanta, he would take the responsibility for the King case. Stokes then, in good Uncle Tom fashion, then produced blow-ups of laundry receipts from Atlanta made out to Eric Galt, one of Ray's aliases, dated April 1st. Again, he said that Ray had said that this man had asked him to put his hands on these and to look them over days before. Very interesting. When the clothes were dropped off, and April 5, when they were picked up, Ray admitted that he dropped off clothes at the laundry, but said it couldn't have been on April 1. He admitted picking up his clothes on April 5. Ray and his attorney, Mark Lane, seemed stunned at this point, challenging the validity of the evidence. This clear evidence, said James, attorney, our good friend, who's been the chief spokesperson and the most prominent lawyer to open up these investigations of murder against Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Senator Kennedy and President Kennedy. He said it's quite possible to put fingerprints, there are all sorts of devices to put fingerprints on cards and make it appear that someone was at some place at a certain time. Challenging the validity of the evidence heatedly, Mark Lane did, but ineffectively, said the New York Times. Throughout the hearings, Lane was involved in repeated procedural wrangling with the committee, criticizing its use of excerpted versions of documents and raising the objections to what he considered unacceptable standards of evidence and questioning. Lane later tore into the committee after it read a 21-page interview with a former London police inspector, Alexander Eist, E-I-S-T, who watched Ray from his arrest. From the day of his arrest, he was assigned to watch his every move. Wonder why? That seems rather uncommon. And he said that Ray admitted to him that he had killed Martin Luther King because he hated blacks and that he expected to get a lot of publicity and money because of it. That's ridiculous. Nobody would have thought that even USA has to act like it's got some justice. He would have known he would have had to go to jail for some time. Claims refuted. Lane informed the committee he had just talked long distance with a lawyer, a London lawyer, who told him Eist was fired from his job because he took bribes and invented oral confessions, and this was confirmed by the New York Times. I would think the New York Times would begin to doubt the credibility of the opponents of Ray and our good friend Mark Lane rather than Ray. God, it's so easy to frame anyone, and some of you are so damn foolish. You want to go back, you want to do this, you want to do that. You don't realize what you're talking about. It's too damn dangerous. Anyway, Lane charged that by reading I statement before checking his record, the committee was guilty of the most irresponsible and outrageous behavior in the history of the United States Congress. I later maintained to the press that his story was true, but offered no documentation. Ray denied having talked to Eist about the murder. He had never met the man, said he, and he had a witness to that effect. Subsequent witnesses refuted Ray's claim that he was at a gas station at the time King was shot. Coy Dean Cowden testified that he had lied when he told Lane and the National Enquirer that he had seen Ray and his white Mustang at the station, claiming that he had been asked to tell the story by a private investigator writing a book on the King case. It is interesting to know that this Coy Dean Cowden, who changed his story that he gave in the original trial of James Earl Ray, now is worth $200,000. Mighty interesting. He claims now that he had been asked to tell the story by a private investigator writing a book on the Martin Luther King case. A second eyewitness who claimed Ray was at the station, Thomas Wilson, died 2 weeks ago under mysterious circumstances. And that's very convenient. Anybody with their right mind would know that this is a government conspiracy. The man was just a young man in his 30s, and he dies under mysterious circumstances. I tell you, America has already gone fascist, and you damn fools that talk about going back there are idiotic. You ought to prefer to go deep, deep in the jungle before you would think going back to a state that can do this kind of thing to people. Wilson, let me see, I want to get back here. Someone has asked me a question. Hold for just a moment. An eyewitness who had claimed Ray was at the station and talked with him at great length, Thomas Wilson, died 2 weeks ago, conveniently, under mysterious circumstances. But the committee produced testimony claiming Wilson himself was somewhere else at the time. Now, that's very strange. Why didn't they produce the evidence long time before now? The crooners of the station, the co-owners of the station, denied that a white Mustang was at their station before the shooting. Everybody is lying now, and they gave testimony under penalty of perjury. It is also noted, said the New York Times, but they still doubt Ray's testimony, that each of these people are somewhat richer than they used to be. The King hearings have been suspended until November, when it is expected Ray will testify again. The committee will now shift its focus to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963. A series of gunshot tests was conducted in Dallas at the scene of the murder August 20. The tests were ordered after a recent discovery that blips recorded on the police radio at the film of the shooting indicated that four shots were fired. Since the Warren Commission itself on the Kennedy assassination concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman, partly on the basis of the assumption that only three shots possibly were fired, the suggestion that a fourth shot was fired raises again a very strong possibility that there were accomplices to our President Kennedy's death. I just thought I'd give you some of the things that's going on in this goddamn country. It's outrageous. Outrageous, outrageous, outrageous. I'll go on and give you something in Philadelphia now that is something that should shock all the people. Philadelphia protest draws 4,000. The people of Philadelphia are taking to the streets to oppose the city's notorious record of police brutality and killings against blacks, continuation of organized resistance could spell trouble for law and order, Mayor Frank Rizzo's political ambitions if he did not have such power with the Attorney General in Washington. In the biggest public expression of outrage in the city of Philadelphia for many years, about 4,000, mostly black people, marched in desperation on the city hall here on September 16 to denounce the police oppress and to oppose Rizzo, Mayor Rizzo, fascist Mayor Rizzo's ploy for a third term and demand a selective boycott. The same day, stand by for just a moment of question. Same day, following a greeting in Washington with an 8-member delegation of black elected officials and community activists, U.S. Attorney General Griffin Bell, who himself is under indictment by a court but has refused to honor the court, announced the creation of a federal task force to investigate the reports of the police brutality in Philadelphia, but said it might take 3 or 4 years. Of course, we have had too many people, he said, from Philadelphia complaining about police brutality, and he said a lot of people just don't like police. But we will look into it. State Representative Algia Dumas, a delegation member, quoted Bell as saying. Another delegate, Councilwoman Ethel Allen, said the delegation was informed the Justice Department had received 68 complaints and that 35 of them had not been investigated, and many have not been reported. Young black youths who had been beaten and brutalized and left for dead by gangsters, trying to make the Philadelphia citizens to believe that gangs were killing other black youth. This is horror. We should be so grateful that we're in a place of peace where our little children can't grow up to be in gangs and drugs and be beaten by thugs and end up in jail, as all black youth do. Now, by 17, all black youth, half of them, better than half of them, end up in prison. Anyway, the immediate trigger to the mass action was the Philadelphia police brutal shooting and beating of a member of a religious movement, the demolition of their communal residence, where they were living peacefully, together and sharing, and the arrest of 38 passerbys who just happened to look. The police immediately started beating upon them and arrested them and threw them into the paddy wagon in Philadelphia. The demonstration was primarily aimed at fascist Mayor Rizzo's attempts to amend the city's charter to allow mayors a third term in office. The city council has called for a November referendum to decide the charter change, but he has enormous power, not only in Washington, but throughout the United States. Originally, he had said he would not run for a third term, but would run on a white supremacist ticket as president, and there were several millions that had signed his petition. That shows you how much hate there is in USA. Earlier this year, Rizzo, mayor of Philadelphia, said he would not seek political office after his second term ends this year, but would lead a movement to defend the rights of white people, called white supremacy. He evidently changed his mind for the time being. A demonstration was called by black radio stations WDAS announcer Georgie Woods. State Representative Davey Richardson, Councilman Lucien Blackwell, and housing activist Milton Street, among others, some who have disappeared very conveniently. They've just not been able to be found, perhaps dropped in the bottom of the river. The main focus of the demonstration was a call for mass voter registration to beat Rizzo November referendum. Representative Richardson, a staunch Rizzo fascist foe, called for a coalition of black, or white, Puerto Rican, or Chinese in a voter registration campaign to defeat Rizzo, that functional psychopath, as they called him, who occupies the second floor and meets out the so-called administration of justice of this city of Philadelphia that has turned into a dictatorship. The boycott call was specifically aimed at the First Pennsylvania Corporation Chairman John Buntling and the city's construction of a downtown shopping mall called the Gallery. Opponents of the Gallery says the Prestige Project shows the city's disregard for deteriorating housing conditions all over Philadelphia. Bunting invited popular anger because the corporation's First Philadelphia Bank shares responsibility for the financial crisis afflicting the city's school systems and openly advocates redelining in the black and third world communities. The bank, according to activists, also has investments, high investments. Rizzo has directed high investments in Philadelphia, in South Africa, which is the racist concentration camp government of the Union of South Africa. Observers say the demonstrators, which drew crowds from the streets along the paths, were largely spontaneous. However, 2 days earlier, a huge mass meeting attended by over 1,300, still mostly black. There still seems to be a great apathy of getting Puerto Rican, black, Chinese, and white working class together, and that's why the reporter feels that it will have little likelihood of success. And it was addressed by several speakers, including the leaders of the September 16 action. Prepared for the march, the Philadelphia police did not leave the peaceful marchers alone. A large force of uniformed and plain clothes Philadelphia policemen were on the alert during the action. White long lines of police stood on each side of the street. 3 busloads of police were put on standby. Plain clothes cops were scattered among the marchers, many of them beating down older senior citizens. According to some activists, the march was a prelude to better organized action for the future to oppose police brutality and build the voter registration campaign, which is very weak in the city of Philadelphia, as well as most cities in the United States, which has already gone fascist. They hope that they will be able to organize some community feeling in North Philadelphia, where the Black Association is having little effect at all. The People's Defense Committee there and the Direct Action Committee have been calling on help, but at best they've only been able to get about 100 supporters. That's your USA. That's your USA that you glorify, and I want you to stomach it and read it and know it and quit your damn dreaming and quit saying, well, it never happened to me. It's changing. I don't care how Uncle Thomas you are, and how tall and elite, and how prestigious, and how white you talk, and how much you think you can get by, you're going to get it too. Believe me, when it comes, as our doctor here, white doctor, he should know. Dr. Lane said all black people will be destroyed. They have methods in foods, as I just told you in the news earlier. They can give you food poisoning in foods directed towards different ethnic groups. You just die, fall over in the table. It's not difficult at all to get rid of those you don't want. The neutron bomb blows up the whole ghetto. That's an easy way, too. But there's a little radiation there, so the food poisoning would be better. You're damn fools, and some of you are Uncle Toms, and you've been Uncle Toms too long. And it's high time that you hear the news. I gave you direct news from Philadelphia. And I hope that you realize Philadelphia is supposed to be called the city of brotherly love. And I want everybody from that region to read it closely. Everybody from Philadelphia to study it closely and scrutinize it absolutely so that you stand up for People's Temple and this great new community which can protect you from all harm. I love you very much.